You are listening to a production of the Toll Network, home of biting analysis. This is Uncommon Cast RX-164, How Toei Ruined Christmas.
I'm Aleph, the thesis-seeking critic, Duat Red.
I'm Amit, the heart-snacking critic, Duat Pink.
And I'm Sono, the not-so-merry critic, Duat Green.
Putting heroes on fire, Critical Squadron.
Join us as we play a level of Kamen Rider X-Aid. Can Emu, Asuna, and their allies, who are now just these jerks that we're stuck with, cure the Bugster virus before it can wipe out humanity? Find out how we think he's doing as we share our thoughts on Kamen Rider X-Aid, Episode 11, Who's the Dark Rider, and 12, Christmas Special, White Christmas Under Attack. And that is, I hate that title. I'm so upset.
I don't blame you.
I'm so upset. Our writer for both was Takahashi Yuya. Our director was Yamaguchi Kyohei. For both, I'm angry at them, but also delighted with them. Like, I'm not angry at them in the way that I'm normally angry.
Isn't that a nice feeling, though?
Yeah.
It's just kind of how dare they do this to me. To all of us, but mostly to me. Actually, mostly to Emu. This poor child.
Yeah, but he's not real. So
yeah.
you can claim victimhood on this one. Anyway, so let's get started with our diagnosis. First, though, let's welcome back the man of the hour, the Tower of Power, Amit. It's been a while, dude.
Yeah, it has been. Thank you. I don't know where I've been for the last, like, 5 weeks or whatever.
Life has been crazy. It's December and you've got kids. That's...
I don't even do Christmas, though, you know? It's, like, not even a thing. So, it's, life's crazy, you know? But I've been following your exploits, yours and Sono's exploits, at least as far as, Laser Knees and Uncommoncast RX are concerned. And I'd like to say that my presence might diminish the quality of this episode overall.
Oh, hush.
But, here I am anyway. so you guys have been killing it. So
you're not
going to
get
really
me
fun.
To stop crying. I'm going to complain whether you're here or not.
All right. Before we get going too far, I'd like to ask our other special guest, Joseph Joestar, what are your thoughts on these two episodes?
Oh, no!
All right, yeah, I think that about sums it up for us. So anyway, I'll start us off unless you want to go first, Amit.
Yeah, I'll go first because I ran out of time. But I just want to say, like, this show has been really interesting so far. Like I said, I think around the poop gun is when I stopped actively being. Or what was it, the terracotta cannon? Or it was just the poop gun? That's what was decided?
Well, no, it was just the poop gun.
Terracotta was the nice thing to call it. Like, that was Sono, but yeah, let's be real, it's a gun made of poop.
Yeah, so like, you know, the Bugster CGI monstrosities, like, have stopped being interesting. They've kind of stopped being a thing. My man Salty is back, leveled up, of course, you know, because that's how my bro does it every single day. He's struggling. And the thirst is real when you're salty. So, like, this guy is just, I don't know. It's, the show is very interesting. It's much more engaging than I thought it was going to be from the previews. And we all talked about our episodes or our thoughts in, like, the first, second episode, like, oh, this could be really good. And so far it is. I mean, it has its weaknesses, which we are going to hit on. We were, swearing like sailors before we hit record, about some of those things that we're going to talk about and how crappy some of the stuff is. But, overall, it's a really interesting, really positive show that's doing, I'm not going to say it's doing callbacks, but it's like doing things that have been done before in Rider, but in like a really novel way. And I'm really excited to see how the rest of the show carries out and like These were really good episodes. And unfortunately, I kind of got spoiled on what happens in 12 just from being on Tumblr. I was really happy. I'm really happy with how everything went down, even though I'm furious that, you know, Dr. K is gone for now.
Yeah, see, I was very fortunate because, like, I was in the middle of, a quasi-hiatus from Twitter, and I don't, like, I have tons of blacklisted things in my, on my X-Kit.
Okay.
For Tumblr. So I didn't know it was coming. So I just saw this little just note that Sono put up. It was just tweet, absent any context. I can't believe Toei ruined Christmas. And I didn't know what they'd done. But, you know, because they're Toei. Here's the thing. They're Toei. So, like, maybe they just announced that the Girls in Trouble movie Sakamoto was directing was going to have, like, a sexy photo book tie-in or something that Toei was going to keep the money for. Or, like, they just gave away the farm about everything in the next Sentai and it's really depressing. So I'm like, I don't know. Actually, like, everything I've seen looks really good. But that's beyond the point. But that all just kind of comes to my diagnosis, which is that, if nothing else, it's nice to see that the show is willing to do some stuff we haven't seen Rider do in a long time. Like, they create a character who we see grow and change and became, honestly, the favorite character of everyone I've met and talked to about the show. Like, everyone loves him. He's great. He's scummy. He's complicated. And then he's just turning it around. He's coming around to be a good guy, and then they kill him off. Like, I know there's a lot of stuff going on in the rest of the show. There's themes of trust and how you show it, a nuanced look at why people lie, explorations of the difficulty existing in a world where you just can't be in control, thus creating times where you'll feel alone and alienated, you know, stuff like that. But I'm just still gobsmacked that they pull an Aerith or Aerith, but I grew up with the Aerith tradition, so there we are. And they pulled that on us, and I can't help but feeling like they're touching on something that Ghost touched on very well, because for all they didn't do family stuff as well as we would have liked, like, they did amazing when it came to death and talking about what someone else's life means to us. And by pulling this rug out from under us like this, and probably making a bunch of children stare stunned at the screen before bursting into tears, and only, I assure you, children who live not where I live. That's only them. But by doing that, they play a lot with our assumptions about what good guys are capable of, if only because now we know for a fact in the show there are limits to their powers. Like, they can hit monsters, but they can't fight death, which only further highlights that on top of being a show about video game Kamen Riders, we still have that level of the medical drama, and that they can keep that up while they're also talking about weird exposition, four people co-op Dragon power-up, and a census-shattering season finale that introduces an amazing new suit. Like, that is really impressive. And, by the way, in only vaguely related thoughts, Polygon just put up an oral history of Final Fantasy VII, and it's a hoot. You might want to just check it out, dear listener. So, like, just interviews with people. Like, just Uematsu explaining, like, yeah, this is what was going on when I did this. A great breakdown of, like, how he composed One Winged Angel. Like, it's great.
That sounds amazing. I haven't even played FF7. I've only played one. I played FF8 and, like, part of 12, I think. But, like, I love that kind of stuff because, you know, I'm here doing a podcast about a Japanese children's show. So, obviously.
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
Yeah. You're right. Thank you for suggesting that, Aleph.
We're nerds. This is the stuff we're into.
I'm pulling that up right now on my phone. So.
Nice.
But yeah, no, pulling a diagnosis out of this one was hard for me, mostly because, you know, after 3-ish weeks since this episode aired, I'm still aching over it. I didn't go into X8 expecting really strong feelings for anyone, but, you know, again, 3 weeks later, I'm still sitting here getting real emotional about Kiria, literally any time I think about him, which is a lot. But I mean, what I think it really comes down to is character narrative building on a level of intensity that we haven't seen since maybe Oz and the journey that Eiji and Ankh have as characters, if not further back to maybe the realm of Sakurai Yuto in Deno. And we're doing it to that level of completion in a fraction of that time.
Yeah.
Like, his full emotional journey is roughly 9 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And it, wow, as it is just as, if not more fulfilling than any writer who has, you know, the full 48 to 50 episodes to complete their character arc. Like, dang, this dude is way more satisfying than anyone in Drive.
You ain't kidding.
I mean, even really anyone in Ryuki, and I love the Ryuki guys, and there's a lot of them to pick from, but like, you can put Kiria up against any of them, and it's just like, oh, they don't quite match up to what they chose to do with him. And I definitely agree that X8 is taking this huge narrative risk in killing him this way and at this time. And that t-shirt is still the rudest thing I've ever seen, and I need one.
So unkind. Why would they do that?
It is mean. It is mean and kicking salt into the wound. But on some level, this is kind of refreshing, especially when I didn't have really hefty narrative hopes pinned on X-Aid. Because something of this scale was just way beyond my hopes for the show. And Kiria is learning things that are going to affect the entire plot for the rest of the show. Mm. Things we've learned because of him are going to be the next, like, 35-40 episodes. And we know things about the larger world that this show takes place in because of him that we would not know otherwise. Kujo Kiria has left an undeniable and unerasable mark on this narrative and where it's gonna go. And I just find myself wondering who's gonna be willing to do the legwork that he started. Not Taiga, he's got Nico to deal with now, and that's gonna be a story in and of itself. Hero, maybe? I could see it, and it would be a great way to get me to care about him again, having this incident kind of snap him back to himself and make him realize, I've got to be in the present, taking care of people right now, instead of living in my past with my dead girlfriend. But he's gonna need a major attitude adjustment for that, and I don't know if that can be done in a way that's not gonna feel like, okay, we're just throwing out the first 15 episodes of this show and starting over with him. Maybe Asuna, it would give her something to do aside from just kind of bounce around and make noise, and I'd be really interested in her doing the investigations. Especially if it gets her to show off some of her power as a bugster. But someone needs to keep looking into this mystery, and Emu's way too busy being the main character. And Kiria wasn't close enough to anyone else for it to feel right for them to step into his shoes. Still, I mean, if this is the intensity that X8 is willing to reach, I'm curious to see where the show's gonna lead.
True that, and I don't know about you guys, I definitely want to find out the drama series these folks did before this, because if nothing else, they know how to nail 12 episodes.
Absolutely.
That's definitely true.
All right, then.
You give me a solid 12 episodes, I'm happy with that thing, once it's done.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there are Kamen Rider series that we have watched completion that could not make a thing this interesting with 50 episodes, like you were saying, Sono. Just, they have all this time, they can't do this. But speaking of negativity, let's get into our glitches, our problems and nitpicks with 11 and 12.
I got nothing for 11. It was pretty solid.
Yeah, I didn't either, really. It was It was intense.
Well, I'm back and I need to complain, so here we go.
Good, do it.
Okay, so Emu falling right after the exposition drop about his impending end of internship and start of residency, if it works in Japan the way it works in the U.S., like, it rings hollow to me, the fact that he's, you know, tripping all over the place again. Like, we've seen him be selfish and myopic, and, like, the show pointed that out. The resolution of Emu admitting his failings and opening up his mind to new approaches was satisfying to see, and then he trips and, you know, at the start of episode 11, and unless it addresses this, it's going to be nothing more than a draining tick, especially because, if it continues and it just never stops, because I was hoping that it would be like a growth marker in the beginning of the show, like, oh, here's this guy, he's overwhelmed, he's being goofy and wacky, and he's, you know, tripping as part of that. It's visual storytelling. And maybe, I don't know, maybe it is visual story, and the guy just always gets back up,
because
that's what a Kamen Rider does.
It seems to me like they use it as kind of a weird scene transition.
Because we go
right from that conversation, he trips, gets up, and runs into the kid and his mom.
Right.
And that seems to be, he trips, and then encounters a new person. And it's weird. And I think at this point I'm just kind of, like, not registering it anymore.
Look, I'm still skipping over Narya sliding her finger on the, you know, coin hole.
Look, man,
certain
things.
If we wanted to talk about that, we would be on, like, Laser Knees would just be forever just like, guys, could you stop? Just stop. I get that you're trying to show she's a lady, but stop.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know what? I'm gonna keep that in mind, Sono, going forward, and see if it follows that each time it is like him encountering somebody. Which, I mean, I guess it could be interesting. It's just it's a very odd choice, and I don't know whose decision that was. I would like to know. I'd like to meet them and talk to them a little, and just, you know, get to know. But it's okay. Maybe in how long has it been since FF7? 23 years. In 23 years, we'll get a behind the scenes thing talking about
oral history of Xade.
Yeah, exactly.
If they made an oral history of Kuga, like, I would, I'd watch the heck out of that.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Or Black.
Oh, man, don't even.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
It's okay.
Not trying to, yeah.
Now I'm really distracted. Okay. it's a good thing I don't know the words to that song, otherwise I'd be singing right now. So here's my next thing that really bothered me. I could go on and on attacking Christmas on some very solid ground, but I won't. This is not the time or place, especially because I'm about to defend, like, the spirit of Christmas right now.
Good. All right.
But
we were about to have words, bro.
Well, we can have words later, you know?
Look, if you're about the spirit of Christmas, we ain't got no difficulties.
Okay. But, like, all those people pushing and causing bedlam for, I guess, pastries when Emu was out getting cake for Shue, it made for a really, really ugly scene. Perhaps technically and effectively done, and it was sending a message, but it was really awful to see. I don't pretend to know what Christmas is, like, or how it's practiced in Japan, but, like, I know the history of it in the United States is one of fairly recent broad adoption that was lobbied for on two fronts. One, like, within the greater Christian community during Sunday school, they kind of taught it. And one firmly rooted in companies seizing it as an opportunity to launch advertising campaigns. This season being marked by callous hands plucking at people's heartstrings to separate them from their income is awful. In light of the so-called true meaning being something about family, peace, and hope for the future. As a proud capitalist, that's right, I said it,
you've been listening. You know I dropped a whole bunch of stuff on the other side, so fair is fair.
Yeah, but, like, I still abhor materialism as, like, an ethic or an indicator or, like, a thing to be all about. What you have doesn't mean anything as to who you are as a person. It was really upsetting, to see it displayed as, like, this materialistic free-for-all with, like, people physically, like, there was like a mini riot just to get sweets for Christmas. And it was just, it was really bad. I can only hope that, like, it was framed that way to say, like, wow, everybody, this is really ridiculous. Can you believe people go this nuts for Christmas, which is supposed to be this, you know, fun, nice, positive thing. And, you know, Emu got knocked over. Like, and that him tripping or getting knocked over makes sense to me in the show. It's just, and it definitely didn't bother me, except for the fact that, like, this is happening because people are going after pastries. Like, it's a Walmart on Black Friday.
Yeah, I clearly don't know firsthand, and I don't know, you know, as any kind of expert, but I know a little bit about Christmas in Japan. It's very much not a religious holiday, even slightly. It's celebrated more in that spirit, and it's very much kind of a family and or couples holiday.
Okay.
And the cake is part of, is just kind of a tradition thing, I think.
Huh.
I think it's sort of like a relative of the tree. Like, if you don't have the tree, some people get kind of intense about getting the tree if they're late.
And, so, I mean, this is taking place pretty much coming up right on Christmas, and people put in orders for these cakes beforehand. So trying to get one on the fly like that can be a little bit of a madhouse, especially if you're trying to go to, like, a popular place.
Okay. I'm seeing context informing this a little better.
But, you know, that's just the information that I have, and I'm sure there's better ways of explaining it, this and that. But, you know, on to episode 12. I feel so bad for Asuna that Emu and Hiro both kind of steal her thunder when she reveals she's a Bugstar. Like, even if it was kind of obvious because, girl, you are going in and out of a television. Like, she seemed so excited to tell them and see what their reactions would be. I'm wondering if her, like, they say her name is an anagram for, like, temporary nurse. And I'm wondering if that's kind of a callback to how the Kamen Rider Club and all of the horoscopes had anagram names in Forze. How all of them were Showa riders and all of the horoscopes had names for what they were. Though in saying it verbally, it may mean that this is a larger thing that we're tying into the plot, and that Poppy may, on some level, be equal to Pallid. And God, do I want that, because I want her to be some kind of, like, adorable but horrifying, all-powerful viral god.
I was kind of hoping the same thing. Like, given a number of the theories about Emu, I can't help but feel like it's taking a lot of wind out of a number of sails to have Hiro just step in, and step on her reveal like that. Because, like, what's a good, if Hiro is indeed, like, part Bugster or whatever, and he's like, hey guys, it turns out I'm part Bugster. Like, if Hiro has any reaction that is not, yeah, hadn't you figured that out yet? Like, I will be calling nonsense. If he's going to step on Poppy's reveal, he should step on Emu's too. Because if he's so flippin' smart and doesn't care about anything, I really just... Okay, here's my big glitch with episode 12. Hiro continuing to be in the show. That remains a problem I have with this show. I'm sure he'll have a purpose later, but, like, between the actor... Like, again, I don't know who it is. Is it the actor, the director, the writer? Someone needs to give me one reason not to want a bus to fall on him from orbit. The character, not the actor. The actor is fine.
Right.
In many senses of the word. No, I'm kidding.
I don't know, man. You follow his Twitter?
I do not.
He is attractive and fun, and he's been hanging out with Makoto lately.
Oh, right, because they, yeah, nice.
I believe they're part of the same agency. They've been hanging out. I'm not sure how I feel about Kamen Rider Chronicle. I guess we'll see where that goes. This is an anniversary show, and I know, you know, we had all of Decade, but in Decade it was kind of a central core element of the show. It was the show. And, you know, we had the Kamen Rider Club tied into previous riders, but it wasn't this direct. So, I don't know. I guess we'll see. I'll reserve judgment, but it's one of those things where it kind of takes me out of the moment. Please, God, everyone, stop being rude to Director Kugami.
Just yes, please.
Stop.
Seconded.
I'm gonna complain about this every time it happens, because I don't want it. Like, the dude runs a hospital. You don't get to be the director of a hospital if you're not competent. This dude has to be smart. He has to be good at what he does. Please stop making him into... I'm fine if sometimes he's a little silly, if he's just a happy dude, but please don't make, like, everything he does a joke and present him as completely incompetent about his chosen field of work.
Yeah, that'd be nice. They made one joke actually work for me, which was when he and Poppy were looking up at the director Kyotaro on the, or yeah, Ministry of Health guy Kyotaro on the screen. Like, he was looking up, they were looking up into the camera for us to, like, I don't know, they said something at the same time, and it was kind of funny, actually. Him and Poppy, and then, like, Hiro was looking at him, giving him side eye, and he looked over at Hiro, and then he looked back up towards the monitor, because they were, like, doing a video chat or something with the director. That actually, it felt okay there, but yeah, it's,
no, that,
it gets
that
pretty
part
bad.
I was fine with. It's the whole bit where they're talking about Salty and the virus mutating, and he's like, what do you mean, the virus is mutating, what does that mean? And Hiro's you're a doctor, you should know that. And it's like, yeah, he should. Why is this happening?
Yeah. Way to lampshade your own bad writing, writers.
Yeah.
And this is more of a subbing thing than a complaint about the actual episode. Zombie Genom, his actual title is Kamen Rider Genom Level 10. They say the word 10 in English. So subbing it as Level X... while not incorrect due to, you know, X being the Roman numeral for 10, it feels more like level blank, similar to Holic, a manga by Clamp where it's kind of, it's three X's and then Holic where the X's are supposed to be kind of a blank, like alcoholic, whatever.
That's what that is. Okay.
Yeah, like that's, it feels more like that, where it's supposed, where level X feels like some kind of glitch, where he doesn't have a level, as opposed to a number indicating that he's at just such a higher level than the Kamen Riders that we have, who are at best at level 5.
That's fair. I mean, I kind of like the level X because it makes me think of Mega Man X. And y'all don't even know how much I like a Mega Man game. And, you know, Mega Man X, everyone's like, no, man, it's Mega Man 10. It's like, no, it's X because we don't know what iteration he is. He's so far, again, it's that thing you say, it's so far beyond. And the X in the subtitle got that for me. But I can tell we're coming from different contexts there, which is, it doesn't quite hit right. Though I will agree, because, like, you can hear them say, level 10. Which is, you know.
There's that dissonance, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I need my harmony, and it just doesn't always happen.
It's, if it was kind of like the glitch thing, where he's just, his level is so far beyond that he just has glitched out of having a level, I'd be totally into that. That sounds kind of awesome.
I know, right?
But that's not what it is.
No, it's not.
Yeah, first of all, thank you for the subs, Excite Subs, at excitesubs.wordpress.com.
They are doing just saintly work.
But yeah, I have to agree with Sonia. The choice does seem off, and it hit me in my ear. Anyway, it was a double whammy. My ears heard 10 and my eyes saw X, and I thought, what? Because I don't have the Mega Man X context in my corner helping me out. So it just really just seemed like a strange choice to me. They do seem really open about input, though, so I think I might comment. And if they respond, I'll let y'all know for next episode. Nice. You can include that in feedback or something.
Like, I just want to know why they made that choice.
Yeah, I love a translator note, y'all.
I would just love to know the reason. Like, I'm not even saying that sarcastically. I'm just like, hey, I am curious to your thought process.
Like, look, I over here, when we got the subs they did for Shinkenger, via Mega Anon, through Overtime, it's like, okay, I have disagreements with how this works. I read their translation notes for like just one of the transformation calls. That's it. We're just watching. It's like, this doesn't flow. Doesn't work. So we're just going in, reading the translation thing. It's like, okay, I see why you did that. Now I'm going to mess with it to make something that we think sounds better. That's how we do. Translation notes are a gift. Translation is such a weird, fiddly art that notes are sometimes really helpful.
Yeah, I gotta say, I checked out Metronome Subs at your suggestion, Aleph, and I've downloaded all those notes, or I've copied and pasted them all into a running document. So, you never know when you won't have internet connection, because I'm paranoid, exactly. I guess.
Save. It's cool.
So I have it saved. What I should do is put it on a Google Doc and then sync that to my phone and then have that. Anyway, never mind. It's cool, because now I actually read through like the notes for like 4 or 5 episodes, even though I've only watched like 2. But it's fascinating to have all that stuff behind the thing you're enjoying.
Yeah, I mean,
because
we watched the Free Joker subs of Bokendra when I was rewatching it with someone, and they released notes with everything. And they had some really interesting translation notes, and then you get to how they decided to localize the Saga Sniper, and I disagree so hard.
At least with the translation notes, you're like, I disagree with your choice. I'm going to do, or in my head, I'm going to replace it with something else, or if they have separate subfiles, I'm just going to go into them with Notepad and fix it.
In my head, I'm just going to call it what it's called.
Well, that too. What, did they not call the Saga Sniper? That's its name.
No, it's... Because it's... Sagasu is search, and they translate that, but I forget how they do it, and the way that they localize it sounds bad to me. And they said some rude stuff about TV Nihon in their specific note on that. And that got my backup on it. I totally, I can 100% understand, because TVN initially subbed it as SGS Sniper for a couple of episodes, because if you hear it, the way that they say SGS in the show sounds very similar. Because I think it's a pun. Because again, the verb is to search.
Yep.
And I think the way they say it is a pun on that. So, like, I can understand the mistake, and it was only for like 2 or 3 episodes I remember that it was subbed that way. So I'm like, you don't need to say that. There's such a gap between when they subbed it and when you subbed it, like, you're just being petty and rude.
See, another interesting thing, let's talk about free speech for a moment before we move on to power-ups.
Hit it.
It's nice when everybody feels free to say what they really mean and show you who they really are, because then you can decide, do I really want to put up with you in order to get this thing that I want? No. I'll take my business elsewhere. Goodbye. So, anyway, I don't like it when people are mean. I don't like it when people are jerks or hurt other people on purpose. But it's nice for people to feel comfortable enough to do that so that you can identify the bad ones from the gut. You know?
To have that beef with TV Nihon. And I'm perfectly welcome to think they're being kind of mean-spirited and petty about it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, otherwise, the subs were very good, aside from that one localization, but it's just that note annoyed me so much. Because they're like, we don't know why they did it this way when there were, like, magazine scans that had it out. And I'm like, I don't know, man, maybe they just didn't look at those.
Yeah, magazines are extra-textual as hell, and sometimes very difficult to come by.
And especially this, like, when did they start subbing things? Because I know TV Nihon goes back a lot further than most other groups.
Oh, man.
They started a lot earlier.
Could they have started in 2005? I kind of remember that being the case, but I don't know for sure.
It may be, and if that was the case, like, Bokenger was 2006. Like, they may not have had access to them.
Yeah, people really forget that a lot of the... It is only just now that it has become even somewhat easy to get hold of that stuff. And even now, it's not actually easy.
So, I mean, I don't know. That's just...
And it's not like they make money being the unofficial translators.
Oh, they don't?
Yeah, I know. So shocking.
Whoops.
But, I mean, yeah, okay, so that was me being petty about other people being petty. And I'm willing to accept that.
Well, then, since that was sort of our cleansing of our bad notes, let's get into the power-ups and the things we enjoyed with 11 and 12. Sono, why don't you start us off?
Okay, there was some real good music in 11. Whatever that song is that's playing in the very beginning when he's first talking to Shuhei and his mom, that's a good jam.
I'm gonna have to go listen for that.
I don't know why there was such a good song in such a like talking heads moment of the show.
I'm glad they put it in because you know that helps it be more than just a talking heads moment in the show.
Yeah. And Emma wanting to help Shuhei and remembering, like, oh, well, my doctor gave me this game, and that helped me feel better. But instead of just being like, here, play this game, and you'll feel better, because that worked for me, he wants to find out what this kid actually likes. And it's this nice, subtle awareness of, I want to do a nice thing to cheer this kid up, but not, he may not like the same things I do.
Man, he's such a good dude. I love it so much.
I love this kid.
It's nice to have, like, 2 years in a row, we've got some, like, just really good people writers. Like, they're good.
Just sweet boys. The whole setup for where the plot is leading Kiria in these two episodes is so strong. Like, the whole bit in Dan's office about, you know, who Emu trusts, like, I trust Secretary Hinata, and I don't trust you because he helped me and you lied to my face. It's just some really nice writing, and going at these episodes a second time, like, even a third time, it really digs in harder how upset I am over losing Kiria. Because all the good writing was going to him. And just watching Kuroda playing this long con with Kiria is just fantastic. Because Kiria's just watching him lie to everyone. And it just digs in his ideals about lies and lying.
It's so good. It's so good. And I don't remember exactly where it all came from. But I also do like that in 11, we double down on Kiria's suspicions about Hinata maybe being, like, absurdly untrustworthy, and our boy kind of he goes in to believe it. It's I don't know. I just really like Kiria just being like, look, you've got this dude who's got a lot of power, and you really think a lot of him. Maybe you should just consider. I'm just saying.
I think I mentioned this last week, but the guy playing Kyria really knows how to use his face.
Yeah, he do.
He's really good at using his face. Like, when he's talking to that nurse about the operation, and she's like, oh, everyone trusts him, and everyone really liked him, and he kind of's like, oh, well, you know, maybe he's not bad, but, you know, what happened then? And, you know, when he's talking to himself and being like, oh, well, Emu trusts him, well, this is the person I trust. And just the worry on his face as he's watching the fight, like, the dude really knows how to use his face, and I'm gonna miss it.
Yeah, and then...
Can I jump in real quick?
Please do.
So, no, I love the fact that, one, you're pointing that out again, because it's true. I made special efforts to focus on his face in episodes 11 and 12, and, like, his face acting is fantastic, and one of the great things is that it leads... One of the great things about art in general is that, or performances in general, which are art, whatever, we can have that protracted conversation another day.
Yeah.
is like, you can interpret things different ways. So I thought what he was thinking as the nurse was going on about how everybody trusted the doctor so much, and it's just in the same vein. I was just kind of coming from it in a different direction. I was thinking about Kyria, thinking about how untrusted he had become to all the writers, especially Emu, and probably how he wanted to be in that place of trust again with Emu, or maybe he was even envious in general, just like, man, it must be nice to have the people who you're working with trust you so much, and even the people outside of the people with whom you're working, you know, directly trust you and have faith in you, and that must be really nice, because you gotta imagine the guy really feels lonely right now. You know, his friend's dead, we don't know any family background of his, and these three guys, and even Asuna, don't trust him as far as they could throw him, you know?
Yeah, it's like the one dude that he cares about in the world is like, I don't trust you, and I think you're a terrible person.
I was telling the truth, though, you guys. I told the truth for once. Ah, hoisted on my own petard. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. And I just really enjoyed also, like, in the light of that, we also then have Kyria, like, we show who he is, like, you know, you are who you are what you say to a large degree, but you are also what you do. And we see what his true colors are when he just tackles Emu while the Dragon Game starts messing with him to keep him from getting bike tired to death. Boy, the Shatterkiri finals, just, they're not very impressive to describe. Like, just,
no.
Oh, it's a bike tire, but it's sparking! But
it doesn't even spin. It's just the effect that makes it look cool.
Yeah.
If it looks cool.
But, you know, anyway, but Kyria runs into the middle of a Kamen Rider fight to save a Kamen Rider when he's not armored up. And it's just like, right, who is Kyria? That's who he is. End of the day, he's a guy who would risk his own life for someone else. And that's, it's like, that made me like him even more, which made episode 12 hurt even more.
I know. And in doing that, and he's like, hey, no, you trust that guy, don't, because the entire conversation that's happening is Dan lying again and being like, oh, Hinata's the mastermind here. And Kira's like, hey, no, you said you trusted that guy, right? And you don't need a reason? Then you keep trusting him, because that guy is a liar, and I believe in you. Like, I don't care if you don't trust me, I trust you. And that's enough for Emu to be strong enough to use this four-player game by himself. The entire thing stops malfunctioning at that point. Like, Poppy even says something like, hey, what? It stopped doing that thing. And it's precious, and I miss him. The Christmas drawing, though, of Poppy, Emu, and Hiro on the whiteboard in the background of 11 and 12 is the greatest.
Yeah, it's pretty cute.
But, you know, foiling... Going back to the important things, foiling Kuroto's lying and Kyria's lying off of each other is so incredibly good. with Dan just digging further into his lie while Kyria decides to put his trust in Emu really cements the difference between why they are lying. And the show is capable of some really dynamic writing when it wants to, except it's all focused on Kyria, and I don't know where it's going to go now.
Well, it's got to go somewhere, I hope.
I'm afraid that it's not.
If nothing else, though, like, we do have this bit where they're making this very direct thematic connection through some good compare-contrast of a good hero and of an evil one, just doing a version of, like, a subtextual, we're not so different, you and I, while also showing off Kuroda's just massive manipulative egotism by just lying in the face of a liar about how they don't know who the Dark X8 is when both of them know. And he's just like, call me on it. Come on, call me on it.
That is so fantastic. Oh my goodness.
This bad, you know, say it. Say it. Say it for your friend. Look like a jerk forever. It's just like, I love that side of Dan Kuroda. He's just this. He is the most supervillainous supervillain we have had on Kamen Rider in I don't know how long. At least, like, he's implicitly, like, the main one. This would be like if Gremlin was the main villain in Wizard for most of its run. Like, he's just, he's so good. And okay, so kind of on a lore level, it's also nice to get confirmation when Dan bites it. Just, oh yeah, if you die as a video game, you die in real life. Because, like, I was sort of like, okay, well, what's the life bar about? What happens if it runs out? Does it matter? Because they just keep getting slapped out of the suits. So, is that a problem? And now it's like, okay, you do know that if you don't bail out of your suit, you legit die, and that's good to know. And sort of building on my last two points, last time we talked about X-Aid, I talked a bunch about how much I love a supervillain who just gets an extra power by getting a dangerous thing and just shoving it into their heart. But then Dan goes the next level and is the thing I kind of love more. Like, he goes to the next level in a lot of ways, which I think is why he's so charming as a villain. Like, I need to understand how death works to get to the next phase. Well, I guess I'll die then. Like, wow, okay, bro. Like, I know it was a zombie game and how the cartridge was the one white cartridge, which associated with, like, death and ghosts going in Japan, so, but still, like, that's a hell of a thing to pull, especially after we just killed Graphite. So a part of you is while he's like, oh, well, I guess I'll die then. Get the data. And you're kind of wondering, is that it for this dude? And more, like, Dan's death is so clearly outlined because he kills what is ostensibly his life's work, just before going to get himself killed and turned into a dead liar, which is actually a really brilliant bit of foreshadowing. And then, okay, one more time, just because I really love this guy's performance. Like, it's not just that they write him really well. The dude playing him is amazing, because the transition from friendly video game developer / Kamen Rider supplier who just wants to do good, you guys, golly gee, to power mad supervillain who just can't believe how incredible he is. Why? Like, you know, he does have that line. Why am I so intelligent? I'm such a genius, even I don't understand it. It's like, it should be whiplash to see him go between these two extremes, but much like Emu, again, he's a really good villain because he has all these commentaries on all the people he's fighting. Much like Emo, he is these two people, and he switches between them, except he's just much more mercurial and kind of frightening about it, and it gives you just sort of that gut level, like, oh yeah, that's right. Kamen Riders are freaking terrifying if you stop and think about it.
I gotta jump in real quick. That reminds me of Pallid's, I think maybe the best line in the show so far, which is when he goes to Corrado and tells him, "You truly are a terrifying man," and he's just so thrilled that he's messing with this hot fire. And that really to me highlights like how scary Palad might just be himself.
Yes,
if he's so thrilled to be working with this. His piece of work, you know?
You're a living nuclear bomb that is just ready to go off at any time. Yeah, I know. I love working with you, dude!
I noticed, too, this episode that his line, his catchphrase, sort of, is, isn't it exciting? Mm. And,
good call, I missed that.
It's really fascinating because, like, this guy, Palad, he's this weird observer who kind of gets involved when he has to make sure the game stays as interesting as it possibly can be. And his role is going to be super interesting to watch unfold throughout the rest of the show, especially with how Corrado changed things for himself. Guys, I'm going to have to bounce. I was hoping, though, that you would let me throw in a bit of prognosis right here.
Yeah, go for it. Go for it.
Go for it, man.
Okay, so I don't want to share too much, so I'll just say this. You brought up the fact that Emu is like two different people and Corrado is like two different people and that they're such parallels. If Asuna and Palad are both Bugsters and they parallel each other in a very serious way, it's interesting that you have these two guys who are opposed to the game maker and the gamer, and they have kind of these two sides of them, and they both have their Bugster assistants who hang out and offer support to them. Corrado, killed himself and yet lived, and has become something and kind of gone to the next level. I think it'd be super interesting if they carried that, parallel forward and went to a place where, like, there's an M and an Emu, and, like, M dies, the master gamer dies, and Emu is left to pick up the pieces, and I think that would be fascinating to see if they really are like this bifurcated person, like see Emu have to kind of face all these challenges and like match up to this insanely amazing baddie that we have set up for him here.
That
would be really cool, especially since Palad has such a fixation on M.
Mm.
Where if we destroy M,
beats M.
But then he still has to beat Emu and doesn't totally realize that he's beaten M and can't separate them. And we just get this eventual moment of, no, I'm Emu. I am Hojo Emu.
Oh man, that would be great. Or well, Hojo Emu. Boom! It's just like, I love those moments of just asserting yourself. It's like at the end of any given Sentai program, like when they do the roll call, but like they're just in the suits from the neck down, so you see their face for a moment, and they say their catchphrase, and then the helmet pops on. Like every time that happens, it's just like, damn right, you're Gokai Red. Do it.
All right, well, I'll let you to continue. You're going to be up on Power Episode 12 now, right?
Yep.
Yes.
All right, I can't wait to hear the rest of the episode.
All right, well, we can't wait to make it, I guess. I don't know. I had to be clever there. Really sorry.
It's all right. Well, take care, everybody. I'm really sorry about Kiria, and let's hope he comes back, right?
And here's open.
He was so good.
All right, catch you later, boss.
Okay.
Take care, man.
And then there were two.
Here we are.
A much greater number of people than there are really good characters on Kamen Rider X8. I like Emu, but like Kiria was number two. It's like who's the best.
I mean, I loved Kiria with all of my heart, but I mean we've still got Emu, Dan, and Palad.
That's true. And like, I'm hoping Asuna can get a thing to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I mean, like, we don't know enough about Nico yet to make a call. So.
Please let her be.
We potentially.
Just evil, evil auntie Poppy.
Please, God. Just like, I just want her.
You kicked me out of my own game, man. I was the original mascot. back when the game was Dance,
We were
Dance,
in this together.
Poppy.
We were supposed to be partners.
Yeah, which, again, like, that would be another great, you know, callback or you know, thematic echo of, like, Taiga and Hiro. Like, that could actually be a good way to get Taiga and Hiro into being a thing. Like, dude, we were supposed to be friends, but then you killed my girlfriend so that you could go and fight that thing. You were the chosen one! You were supposed to bring balance to the Force! Okay, I'm done.
But, you know, here we are with episode 12. Forever in mourning. But we open this episode with Emu realizing that he was wrong and going to Kyria and looking for the truth and to make amends with him. And I just really love Kyria laying out his entire truth about what happened to him and then just putting it all behind him. He's like, man, you get it now. You trust me. That's all I need. You do what you gotta do, and I'm gonna be watching your back. And he, so again, good. he cares enough about Emu to trust him with the truth.
It's so, like, again, like, in the 9 episodes he was in the show, it's just like, Kyria, don't go!
Please.
I also like, this isn't even really related, but I also like how we start the show with a distinct lack of the opening. Like, once I realized that was going on, I kind of lost my sugar, because you know stuff is on fire when they just have it at the title card and go. Like, no opening, no closing, we put the credits over the show, we don't have time! Like,
we can't waste a minute and a half on this song today!
Yeah. We don't have 3 minutes to just toss out. So everybody, sit down, watch the thing, make the thing. Here we go. Like, okay.
And I know. Here on Uncommon, we complain a lot about, oh my god, what is the mystery? Look at the mystery that's happening. But I really dig the sort of mysteries that they're building around Dan and Emu. You know, with Emu's strange immunity to the virus and the split between him and Em, and Dan possibly having framed his dad for maybe murder? And, you know, Dan apparently having made contact with Emu 16 years ago, around the time of his surgery? And
sounds,
I miss
about right.
That line. Well, he says, or Kyria says to him, like, you made contact with Emu Hojo 16 years ago. And I either missed it or I interpreted it weird and assumed that the compatibility had been programmed into him via the games he was playing, because, again, they're all Genom Corp branded. I'm now not 100% because of that line, but I'm still also leaning into it, wondering if maybe, you know, Palad had some hand in it and was like, oh, because they're saying, like, oh, Hinata went through all this trouble to get him that Wonder Swan. And did he
was
get
that
it
what
from...
that was? Okay.
Yeah, if you look real close at it, it does say Wonder Swan.
Nice.
But, you know, did he get it from Dan? Did Dan do something to it that would program this into Emu as he was playing games on it? Like, no matter where this goes, I'm really interested, and they're building this really interesting, intense timeline.
Well, I think, like, while they are definitely pulling some mystery box stuff, they're also doing it in a way that is actually surprisingly respectful of the audience, because, like, it at least gives you something to play with by presenting all ton of in-universe facts alongside the characters themselves kind of speculating or pointing out, hey, here is an interesting thing maybe you should be thinking about. What compatibility surgery? We all had it. Why didn't he? Etc. And it allows us to build our own theory along with the characters. And I know a lot of people hate being proven wrong. I mean, I have sat on the sidelines and watched some astounding ship wars happen. Just like, no, this is the one that is going to happen. It is true and canonical. And just like, those fights are astounding. But if nothing else, it means that we, the audience, can carry on Kyria's noble work of finding the truth. I just, Kiria so much.
I know, so do I. They show us three games that Emu has as a child for the Wonder Swan, and they're very interestingly tied into the present, because the one on top is literally just Excitebike.
Nice. Look, I mean, let's face it, Excitebike should be number one in this show.
I'm not sure if Dragon Adventure is supposed to be Hero via Tattle Quest or all of the riders together via Drago Hunter. Since the third game, which I can only make out part of the title as Naro-chan because Excitebike is on top of it. But it looks more like something that would correspond to Asuna or Poppy as opposed to being a first-person shooter for Taiga. But they're definitely saying a thing and foreshadowing Kiria's importance by putting Excite Racer front and center.
It's a very good point.
His little Henshin smile is back.
It's not 100% and it's not always consistent, but boy, I do love seeing it, don't you?
Yeah, it's nice to see him feeling confident again now that he's made these amends with Kiria. And I feel like that's why he was willing to do it, because he's like, oh man, all of my stuff is back in line, I've got my dude, like, it's all good. And I can kick this thing's butt.
Yeah, you can.
They killed me with all the Christmas DLC forms.
Seriously, I do want them to actually make a half-decent tie-in game for X8, because most of the Kamen Rider tie-in games are how to be diplomatic, hot steaming garbage. Like, I have Batride War, y'all. Like, I love me a Dynasty Warriors game. It is not a good, like, the fact that they programmed in all these unique move sets for all of the different Kamen Riders is really impressive. But all of the enemies are just who cares? It's terrible. Anyway. I do want them to make a good, or at least half-decent, X-Aid game, and then for the Christmas form to be something you can get for free and or cheap, like, either by unlocking it or just, like, buying it on the store, the online store. I just think that'd be fun.
Yeah. It was just a really cute, like, oh, this is a limited edition thing that we get just today.
Yep.
And while there's not a verbal apology from his mom, Shuhei isn't shown as being wrong for having felt neglected by them, you know, doing so much work. Like, Emu explains to his mom why Shuhei was in the tree and got hurt, and, you know, he loves his parents and was just feeling neglected because, you know, it's Christmas and they're busy. They've got all these cakes they've got to make. And maybe that's why we have that scene of, like, everyone flipping out at the cake store to kind of emphasize at this point, look, you've seen how these people get over cakes, and I wish Amit was still here. Darn it.
Yeah, actually, yeah. But I think he'll appreciate that. I certainly appreciate that point of view. I not made that connection, so thank
we're
you.
Like, if that's what these two people are dealing with every day right now, like, yeah, of course this kid's gonna feel like Christmas and doing business at Christmas is kind of taking over his parents. And, like, his mom does her best to make that up to him and show that she loves him. She's not wrong for having been busy. It's her job, and, you know, she and her husband need to support their family and their child.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can pay their medical bill for him breaking his leg because they have all this business.
Before, the legend of the rent is way hardcore.
It's true. But she acknowledges Shuhei's needs and that he's upset by this and lets him know that she understands and that she's sorry. She's like, hey, no, don't hate cake. We made this for you and we want to spend this holiday with you and we're going to try and do better in the future. And it's nice to see Takahashi stepping it up with this sort of story after the mess Ghost made with every family story it tried to tell.
Yeah. But I think there's also a lot more to the thing as just like something that you watch when you're a kid. At least, you know, as I recall thinking when I was as I was a kid, but that was a long time ago, so I could be wrong. But I think there's something really special and kind of extra intense when you just present the fact of the thing. In this case, parents are seem neglectful. They are busy elsewhere. And you present it as a fact, you explain why it's happening, and then say, you know, there's nothing to be done. You have to deal with it. I mean, I would much prefer fantasy figures of the show or any other superhero-ish series could just come and fix the woes of all the people on Earth as far as, like, getting money, paying rent, trying to do that work-life balance thing. But that's not what's going to happen. So having the superhero just come in and say, look, kid, like, it sucks, but you got to understand how kind of intense stuff is. But please understand that you are loved. And if your parents are cool, they will let you know that even as they are super busy and you feel lonely. Like, I feel like that's a much more useful thing than your parents absolutely, you know, just have the hero just say, your parents love you, and you have to forgive them anything. Like, No. But instead, just, like, the thing, just, hey, this is what's happening, this is why it happens, you get to feel how you feel about it, but please understand. Like, that's what I feel Ghost was trying to do, and just failed at every turn.
Yeah. Christmas Poppy and Brave were real cute. Again, I love all of the Christmas DLC. It was neat to see Poppy be able to actually, like, do a thing in battle where she can, like, break the power-up blocks. And I hope it's not just a one-off holiday joke and is foreshadowing towards her actually being able to maybe do some stuff in the future.
God, it would be nice, wouldn't it? But, again, I will say, because it's not ever going to happen, but I'm going to say it anyway. Kamen Rider Poppy, y'all.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, like, if she could use her sick dance moves and pop music beats to save the day, like once a season, I don't think that's asking too much.
Just, you know, every now and then.
Yeah, just let her pop up at the final episode like Conductor and Wagon.
Yeah, just ram a guy with a train.
I'd be fine. Hey, he's made a video game. It's fine. By the way, kids, don't play in front of trains. It will wreck you.
Yeah. And look, I gotta give credit to Matsuda Ruka, because that weird Poppy Jingle Bells song, I don't know how many takes it took her to accomplish that, but I know I would never be able to get any of that out of my mouth without, like, just falling on my face.
Or just, like, in my case, just rolling my eyes so hard. Like, yeah, peep, 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 poppy, just, yeah, guys, I'm done.
Like,
bye.
How are you keeping track of the sounds you need to make?
Yeah, it's really impressive.
And say what you will, I thought it was cute. Even if it's hard for me to believe that this is in the same episode as Dan killing Kiria.
Yeah, like, we usually look to Zhuojer for, like, just the whiplash-inducing tonal switches, right?
Yeah.
This is just like, Merry Christmas, everybody! Now here's your dead friend. It's like, I mean, you guys couldn't wait till, I don't know, like, the episode before Easter to kill the really cool dude? Sorry, I don't know if that was, like, offensive, and if it was, let us know, and I will apologize.
A thing that I noticed in rewatching 12, Kiria contacts everyone else, or at least, you know, Taiga, because I guess he just assumed that Emu would tell Hiro, via the magic doctor stethoscopes that scan for the thing, that scan for the virus. Like, that's how he contacts Taiga. He has Emu's phone number. He calls Emu on his phone.
I guess that's that trust thing.
Look, y'all need to let me have my shippy garbage this episode, because this is all I've got. I don't get any more shippy garbage after this.
Well, I mean, not unless you want to go like the cross-universe, the cross-story or cross-series ship where, for some reason, it's Ghost and Kyria. I don't know if that helps.
Okay, I'm going to keep that in my pocket
for
fanfiction later. But I need this right now. Yeah, he has Emu's phone number. Okay. Now we've got this Nico girl who seems to be an antagonist as she just walks in and is like, "Hey, beat up M for me." And her name being Nico, re Love Live, and her sort of pop punk aesthetic makes me feel like I may not have been far off with my wish for a lady villain that is a rhythm game bugster to parallel Asuna. But her timing makes it feel like I've made yet another horrible Kamen Rider Monkey's Paw wish, and Kyria was the payment for me getting what I wanted.
This is, I can understand this feel, but look, it is a law of just everything that sometimes a price has to be paid. I just hope she's worth it. Like, if she is as excellent a villain as Dan in her own way, I'm not going to say I'll consider it a fair or equivalent exchange, but it'll be like, well, at least we got something cool out of the deal.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, I'm willing to put all of my stock in her, or a significant amount of my stock in her, as time goes on.
Well, if she's at least, like, the Rose Grongi. If she's Rose Grongi, okay.
I mean, look, I don't even need Rose Grongi. Give me, like, Mizzoul.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Rose Grongi's a high bar. That's a high bar to be set in.
That's a bit much to ask of anyone.
Even just give me, like, Smart Lady. Make Smart Lady an actual villain this time. And I'll be 800% on board. But it's just like, man, the timing. The timing of that one.
Xaid giveth, Xaid taketh away. In that order, it turns out.
Yeah. Man, Zombie Ganem is a good suit.
Oh, I know!
I love the way they have him move. Like, this is the first time that weird, jaggy editing has finally felt appropriate. Because, like, you know, he's a zombie and doing weird zombie moves.
Yeah, he's got that thriller kind of action, like, going.
Yeah, like this very quick, quick, slow of him just getting up and getting his balance.
Every time. Just
it's
like, yes!
So good. And I love that he's got this, like, eye color difference, and it's caused by the suit having this red visor over the eyes that's just broken. And just the details on it, like the spine going up his back.
I love it.
It's such a really solid design that is executed so well.
Yeah, it is the best suit on the show, bar none. And I really love all the things that it takes from the other suits, so that you can tell, like, yeah, this is from the same thing, but this is, okay, you know what it is? It's the SIC version of the X-Aid suit, but they just put it in the show and actually made it not look like garbage, which I'm impressed. Like, and because it doesn't seem to have that same need or even compatibility with the upgrades, like the level 3 forms, it's just allowed to be, like, lean and lumpy and kind of intense to look at. And also, it makes it that the injector infector thing, like the first transformation device in a long time that I feel like I need to have. Like, just the creepy transformation calls, like Buggle Up, Broken Game, or whatever. Like, it's just all these kind of you know that like creepypasta effect, like when you type it in and then like it has all of these tiny letters going like up and out from all of the letters you're doing? It has that kind of vocal effect. Just, it seems so sinister. And then it has like the little the little janky light-up writer zombie graphic on it that, like, yeah, it looks cheesy, but at the same time, it actually really works because that's how the dude moves. Like, it's a real, like, I have a lot of, like, I don't get why for so many of the suits, but, like, this one, I'm like, oh no, you guys actually have a really smart design department. You guys were just going after a very certain look with those earlier ones, so that when you get to this one, you're like, whoa, it's the same, but sinister. Like, I love it, man. Like, it's a really good suit and a really good performance. Like, whoever's in that suit, like, I hope Toei's paying them very well, which I know is a stupid thing to say, but, like, I did not think
to look up who is in the Genom 10 suit. If anyone would like to tell us, I would love to just congratulate them.
Yeah, we'll just send some love out into the world because, like, no one really understands, or rather, they will never hear it. But, you know, whatever. The last thing I just wanted to say about 12 is that the way they set up Kiria getting killed, actually being a slightly tweaked version of the setup from the previous episode, only this time it's someone else entirely who gets killed. Look, that's actually kind of clever. Let's call them all together again to have a fight over a powerful MacGuffin again. Only this time, the dead man wins and kills someone else. It's like, whoa. It just, when you go back and watch it a second time, it's actually really like, wow, guys, all right. I was real impressed.
Like I said, this show can have some really dynamic writing when it wants to.
Yeah.
It's just, it's always centered around Kiria, and where is it going to go now?
Yeah, I know. Just give me more Kiria. I love that dude. Speaking of, now we're on to our prognosis and the things we think this show has for us in the future. Sona, why don't you start us off? Because I think we're on a pretty similar page.
Look, I'm going to live in the deepest pits of denial for the next roughly 9 months because I refuse to believe he's gone for good. It just doesn't make narrative sense. And I know that's never stopped Kamen Rider before, but how do you give someone 1/4 of a group power-up and then kill him 2 episodes later?
Look, man, how do you give Eris the holy materia and then... and then have Sephiroth just impale her on the sword, right?
Yeah, it's just...
I know. I'm also pretty sure we're going to see him again in one form or another. But, like, a part of me either hopes that he never comes back as a writer, or that he turns out to, like, have infiltrated Kamen Rider Chronicle the Cartridge, and that's how he returns, and then we would all weep for joy. It's just one of those things where it's like, if he can't come back near immediately, like Gintaro the Blue, through the power of friendship, you know, I love the character, but I actually kind of want him to stay dead for a while so that it will continue to be like, just that thing where, wow, did Kamen Rider actually kill someone and have them stay dead?
Like, look, I'm fine with waiting 45 episodes for him to come back as long as he comes back. And, like, be he in the cloud... living in the Digimon world or whatever now. Cause I mean, he just dissolved into data, and look, that sure didn't stop Philip from being dead.
And also, like, one of the other, like, bugsters, like, got reabsorbed back into the infection thing.
Yeah.
After he got killed, so.
If he's hanging out in Reboot now,
that'd be a great crossover.
they boot up Kamen Rider Chronicle, and he's just like, hey guys, I guess I live here now.
Hey guys, could you point me at the user? Yeah, he's right over there. Great. I'm just going to go and exit out of his screen. It turns out I've turned into one of the Bugster Data things like Poppy.
Yeah, like, okay. I'm fine with that, and I'm fine waiting 45 episodes for it as long as it happens.
Yeah, because, especially, like, I don't want it to happen in like, some side movie. Because, like, look.
No.
Toei seems to be very fond of that. I'm not. Just put it in the thing. Put it in the main show so that we can all have, so I can have my freaking catharsis, you guys.
Please, give me back my boy. A friend pointed out to me that the little dudes that Tiny Emu was drawing in the flashback matched up to the colors of the split upgrade that we see in the episode preview for 13. I'm not sure if it, you know, means something larger in, you know, Emu's forms being dictated by this programming that he kind of maybe received, or if it's just cute foreshadowing for the new form. But it's pretty neat foreshadowing either way. Whatever it happens to be foreshadowing, it's a nice detail.
It's a thing at the very least that you're like, okay, this feels like foreshadowing. Which, again, like with the way they do their mysteries and intrigue, it's like, okay, everyone, come up with a theory, and we'll compare notes at the end. Which I can dig on.
Yeah.
And that finishes out our prognosis, but this week we actually have a point of concern, one of the questions sent in by a dear listener like yourself, dear listener, which was a... Oh, come on.
And this one wasn't... I don't know if the person who sent this is a listener. This was a question that I received via Anonymous on Tumblr that wasn't specifically posed to the show. It was just posed to me. But I like the question a lot, and I wanted to discuss it here, because I think it's a very interesting question, and is on a thing that I have a lot of thoughts and feelings about.
Well, even better. Shall I read the question?
Go right ahead.
Yeah. So from Anonymous on Tumblr, do you feel more for Kiria's death in the latest Exaid than Hase's in Gaim? Since they're both around the same episode, and I think you hated the latter, if I recall correctly, I was wondering what you thought.
And I'm basically just going to kind of rehash what I had said there, because for my own part, they're two completely different animals that can't even be compared. Yep. You know, to make the Gaim joke, they are apples and oranges. This was in Gaim episode 14, here it's episode 12. Gaim spent 14 episodes unable to decide on a tone for Hase and Jonouichi, so they were bouncing back and forth between being, like, legitimately threatening kind of semi-antagonists and being completely unthreatening joke characters. So it made it really hard for me to develop any kind of attachment to them, either as protagonists or antagonists. And it made it really hard for me to feel anything for Hase about his death, because I just didn't know who he was. He wasn't a fully formed character to me. And then on Kota's level, Hase's death was just deeply frustrating. Like, watching Kota react to it was so incredibly tedious. Like, Kota and Hase were not friends. They didn't like each other. They barely even acknowledged each other at best. And Kota is not the one who killed him. So it's not even a matter of him reacting to himself killing another person. Because that's not what happened. It's one thing for him to have a hard time coping with someone's death. But he reacts to Hase's death as if he lost a very close friend. And also, we keep it from Jonouichi and Hase's team, who are Hase's actual friends, who actually care about him. And until the end of the show, or maybe one of the post-show movies, I'm not, I know they find out eventually, and I don't think they find out at the same time, but it's at best in the epilogue of the last episode. If not in a post-show movie. So
yeah,
it becomes...
They talk about it, and I don't know if they actually do ever tell him.
I'm pretty sure they do tell at least Jonouichi.
Yeah. Anyway,
I feel like I remember someone telling me that. But it becomes... Since no one who actually cares about Hase ever finds out, and it just becomes about Kota and his pain and not about Hase. And on top of this entire ordeal, there is the layer that is Rat and Rika. Kota's actual teammates, his actual friends, who he came back to this team for to help protect. They were attacked by Hase. This entire fight, that's where this fight starts. And Rat was hospitalized. And this is immediately after we, the audience, find out that being attacked by an Inves as a human means you get some kind of plant parasite that overgrows your body. And I remember, like, the people that they showed that happening to screaming and being in horrible pain. But we don't see Rat after he's taken to the hospital for at least another 2 episodes. Possibly more. I don't totally remember, but I feel like it was about 2 weeks that I was complaining about it. And, like, that's the first time we have Kota even thinking about Rat and Rika, much less going to visit them. And his only apology is that he wasn't there to directly protect them, even though Rat being hurt was due to Kota's own negligence. Because before they go out, they're at the fruit place, and that's where Hase attacks. And before they go there, they're at the team base, and Kota's like, hey, stay away from Hase. And they're like, hey, why? What's going on? What's up? And he just says to stay away from him with no further explanation, and then leaves. So, you know, Rat and Rika go out, they go out to get lunch, they're having a nice time, and suddenly Hase runs in, he's attacking people, and they go and they try and help people get out and go calm him down because they think he's still a human. He's a jerk, but he's not heartless and he can be reasoned with, and we don't know why he's attacking, but he can't be reasoned with now because he's become a monster, and Kota knew that and didn't tell them. And this fact is never acknowledged by Kota or by the show, and they just forget about it, and it completely soured me on both Kota and the show.
It's legit.
And I'm, to this day, absolutely furious about this garbage bit of writing. And that
well,
is
again,
my
like,
take
you didn't
on
finish
Hase's
Gaim, so I'm glad that you only have that one. No, actually, I know you have many bits of garbage writing in that show to be angry about, but trust
yeah,
me, the hits keep coming.
Oh, I'm sure. But Kiria, on the other hand, has had the most compelling and well-built narrative thus far in Xade. We go from, okay, Kiria is a liar, to, oh, no, he's just grieving, and it's made him... Like, he's just grieving and he's trying to do his best. To, oh, no, that was also a lie and he's just in it for himself. And then we bounce back to, oh, no, he really is grieving and lying is his coping mechanism. And his behavior is not healthy, but it's fascinating. And we see him go through all of these phases and come to this conclusion that he cares enough about Emu to trust Emu with being able to handle the truth. And he hands him the truth, and then he seeks out more dangerous truths for Emu to try and keep him safe. Even when Emu doesn't believe in him. Even when Emu's like, I don't trust you, I don't want to work with you. He's like, I still want to do this for him. And Kiria is the first, and at this point only, member of the group to stand with Emu completely and unquestioningly. like, the bond between them and how solid it is for Kyria is a major facet of the story constantly in these episodes that lead up to his death. And because of that, Emu's grief feels real. And every single member of our protagonist cast is there to witness it. Hiro and Taiga may not like Kyria, they may not trust him, they may not feel he needs to be on this team, but they feel his death. There is a hole in the team now, whether the two of them want to admit it or not. And even if I can't bring myself to believe that he's permadead, even though he did get flowers, which was a knife to the heart.
Oh, I believe it.
Everything about it in that moment felt real, and that it will have real consequences on the story going forward. Like, the space that Hase left in Gaim was negligible. It didn't mean anything. But the space left by Kyria is going to affect our remaining three riders for a long time.
Yeah, and I think that right there is the sort of the clincher for me. Because it's hard to feel like Kyria's death is not going to matter. Like, all the main characters were there for it. He had contacted them. He had developed some kind of relationship with them, even if it was kind of adversarial. And also, he was one of the main dudes. At the time of this recording, which is a couple days after Excite Subs put out episode 13, that dude is still in the opening credits.
I know, and I'm upset.
I believe it. Like, he had goals. He had real goals. He had a history, a context, a life that we, the audience, all got involved with. Not because he's a pawn in a larger game, but because he had a thing he was about, and a way he was going about to get it. And then some character growth happened as he learned that he had to be more than just a flippant jerkwad motorcycle man.
I love him. And, like, that's another thing. He's still in the opening, where Hase wasn't even in, like, the pre-show materials. Jonoichi was. Suit was in, like, pre-show materials, but the pinecone suit wasn't.
Yeah, like, and here's the thing, and maybe this says about my level of engagement with Gaim generally, but I barely remember Hase, like, period. Like, I came into this podcast for my first thing in the middle, and I kept forgetting he was a thing. People would keep reminding me about him, because that's all he mattered in the story. Like, he served this one plot purpose of generating more angst and showing what happens if you eat the fruit, and he caused some pain and all that stuff, and it ultimately led to what? Coda sitting by the side of the river and thinking about what it all means, man, just like everything else in the show. His space in the story was filled by, you know, whatever they had laying around, because he was never that important. His death had nothing to do with the Overlords and their plots, nothing to do with Michi's descent into madness, nothing to do with Takatora's amazing cheekbones, or his slow realization that he backed the wrong horse, or his amazing cheekbones. I just feel
or
that
his
it's important.
Really fantastic eyeliner.
Yeah, like, he is, that dude who played Takatora is an attractive man. But
he, and whoever was putting makeup on him,
yeah.
I want to know their brand
excellent
of eyeliner.
Job. Yeah. That would be the oral history you'd want to know. Like, yeah, whatever, Urobuchi, dark, depressing, yeah, you really like Ryuki, I'd never noticed. Who's the makeup person?
Like, look, man, I spent a long time, my last maybe month and a half of that show, saying that his eyeliner was my favorite character in the show, and I was not, that is not hyperbole.
Yeah. But anyway, so with Hiro's death, Hase's death, we can only be so lucky to lose Hiro. Anyway, with Hase's death, like, this is supposed to be a tempering event for Coda's heroism. It's supposed to be a thing that really, like, defines him, because, yeah, he accidentally was responsible for this thing, but we never talk about it. Like, it feels massive and strange to me that we never bring him back up, because any time a Kamen Rider fails to save someone, as in the case of Kyria, like, that's a big flippin' deal, and we should make sure we're relating things back to that failure and defining the rest of the show by it, or what was the point of it? right? Because, like you were saying, like Curious Death, it serves a lot of masters on top of pulling one of those oh snap everyone's potentially in danger moves. Like we have potentially for Hero another bit of gritty Batman pain for him to angst over. It's the loss of a potentially good friend for Emo. It's like, I don't know what it is going to be for Taiga, but whatever. He was acting affected by it anyway. It's
At the very least, it's going to affect how the other two do things, which is going to affect things for Taiga.
Exactly. Like, it's... And it... Like, it really kneecaps the ability of the dragon suit to work, because it needs four people. And it cuts the number of people who are even capable of being writers for the CRC by 25%. It further delays the outcome of the backburner mystery of Emu's origins, which, like, again, I think we've got kind of a half-decent line on. But it also deepens that mystery, as now we have a connection to some sort of, again, if I'm not misremembering, the Mr. Kuroda the Elder, is some sort of, like, medical technology criminal. And it also builds on our main villain, because, yeah, that's his dad. It also felt like the perfect way to close off a 12-episode season before a break, which creates this kind of OMG cliffhanger while allowing us to have Curious Jerkitude leading almost directly into understanding and even adoring him as part of Emu's first arc. And not coincidentally, his time as a pediatric intern, giving us subtextually the message that he's growing out of kids' stuff as he has come into the knowledge that not only are his enemies hella evil, but also that mortality is a real thing you have to deal with. Like, wow, that's a lot of stuff they did. This event has ripples throughout the show, and if you went back and rewatched the first episodes of Kyria, you would not be able to look at those things without thinking, oh yeah, I know how this goes. This sucks. And then you try and think about, like, Hase again. Like, his death has no effect except for some stuff that happens off screen. If they ever got around to telling Junoichi that his bro was ridered to death or however he went out. I forget how he died.
He was turning into a monster, and that's when the soda belts first showed up.
Yeah.
And, like, Peach Rider, and, like, they killed him. They just walked in and killed him.
It was, that's right. Okay.
It was their introduction.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, he turned into a fruit devil and was ridered to death, and no one told anyone, and no one mentioned it, and, like, I'm sure it was supposed to be like, oh man, those soda riders, they're so hardcore and vicious, but, like, we already knew that.
Yeah, and... So. Like, look, I'm gonna tell you, whenever I try and think of Hase, I just end up thinking of Uva.
Who? Oh, Uva. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, like, my brain just goes straight back to Uva.
Actually, like, I...
Because I care about Uva way more.
And the guy I had in my head is Hase. I think it is Uva. It's just... Yeah.
Like, just
like back
they
hair.
Have the same kind of visual aesthetic.
Yeah.
Except Uva's is more green. Because it's him, and Uva's just a way more interesting dude.
Yeah, Uva is cool.
And I love Uva. He's a fashion disaster, but I love him.
Well, you know, he's just, it's why I loved him, like, spoilers for O's, kind of getting turned into that weird monster thing at the end. Because it's like, oh yeah, he's a bug. What does a bug do? You know, classically, they just sort of do more to get more so they can continue existing, which I've always felt was kind of a nice commentary on the show.
Yeah, and I love him, and it's just when I try and remember even what Hase looks like, I'm just like, but like my mind just jumps to Uva. I'm like, this isn't correct, but it might be better.
No, I don't doubt that it is.
I'm never going to forget Kyria.
Oh, see, and now I've just brought it up on Google Image Search, and it's like, yeah, no, I see why I thought of Uva, because Uva was also way more visually interesting.
Also true. Like, he was just a guy in a leather jacket, right?
Yeah, yeah. A leather jacket over an open dress shirt over a sparkly t-shirt.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's a dress shirt, but it's a button-up collared shirt.
Well, I mean, okay, apparently Hase is also a fashion disaster.
Yeah, but, like, here...
But not as much of an interest... Because Uva wears, like, 4 belts. He wears, like, 2 shirts and 4 belts. And it's like Uva, who... And, I mean, I get it because Uva would... Oh, yeah, Aleph sent me a picture of this kid, and yeah, I kind of remember him now.
Yeah, but, I can see where you'd get Uva, because, it's...
Like, the hair is slicked back and the leather jacket, and he's, the tough one.
Yeah.
Like, Hase and Jonouichi always kind of gave me that Uva and Kazari kind of vibe. And that's why I was interested in them before they turned into, joke characters.
Yeah.
Because I thought they were pretty cool early on, and I'm like, okay, I can see why people are getting behind these two. I'm getting that kind of Uva and Kazari vibe, and I could be into that. And it's like, oh, and then we're putting them in the reindeer costumes.
Yep.
And it's like, I don't know how you want me to feel about these two guys. Please make up your mind. Because if you want them to be the silly guys, that is also fine. Again,
yeah.
Shuntei is a delight, and we should all be glad to have him.
Absolutely.
But, you gotta make up your mind. Am I supposed to take these guys as a serious threat or not?
Yeah, they're just not... Yeah. Well, anyway, that's sort of our thoughts on Kiria vis-a-vis Hase, and how Kiria, actually mattered.
And was the best.
And was, interesting and cool. Him. And again, as I've often talked about when it comes to Kiria's past, had a context and a life and people he knew outside of the main cast. He was here to be more than just our sacrificial rider.
Yeah.
He was here to do more than just show up and die so that, Emu can be real sad and junk. Man. Anyway, so I think that's it for us this week.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So then, for Uncommon Cast RX and the Toll Network, I'm Aleph.
And I'm Sono.
And Kiria.